Okay, everybody, workday's over.
This is the best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
Jonathan Rand is the producer of this program at times. Not quite sure how much Rand will be engaged today, considering the Braves and the Brewers are on TV right now in this best of five NLDS. The series is tied at two apiece. Although, didn't somebody just hit a home run?
Jock Peterson did. Braves legend.
Okay. As I walked in, I was half paying attention, and then I could hear you yelling. No, I could literally hear you yelling through two panes of glass.
It was loud. Alec Campbell opened the door, and he was like, "Are you good?"
Jeez.
I'm all right.
Fair enough.
I'm getting through.
Fair enough. So, yeah, we'll keep you updated on the Braves and the Brewers as the game progresses. Right now, it's 3-0 Braves in the bottom of the fifth. Typically, the Braves disappoint. They'll find a way to disappoint you. And I'm guessing there's a lot of Braves fans that have a shared circle with Carolina fans when it comes to football. And football has found ways to disappoint this year. And North Carolina loses to Florida State on Saturday, and I would classify as an embarrassing performance for the Tar Heels. I said this on Friday when we were talking about the game, Giglio. North Carolina's better than Florida State. Talent-wise, QB-wise, all they got to do is not beat themselves. What did the Tar Heels go out there and they do? What did they do? They went out there and they beat themselves. Offensively, they couldn't get right. A lot of penalties negating any sort of decent plays. And then defensively, they continued to beat themselves by just having a bunch of miscommunications and biting on RPOs for Jordan Travis, who securely now has that job at Florida State. So it was not a great showing for the Tar Heels, and also not a good look for their head coach, Mack Brown, which we'll get to in a second. But we talked about this on Friday. Like, this is a portion of your schedule that kind of eased up for you headed to Notre Dame, and you already blew it on Saturday. Miami will not have De'Aaron King, as he opted to have his shoulder surgery, so he's done for the rest of the year. Miami has its own issues to worry about, but what I looked at as two winnable games for the Tar Heels, suddenly I'm like, I don't know. I certainly don't know now.
Craziest part is they actually got out to the 10-0 lead. Mm-hmm. Like we talked about, hey, if you just kind of put Florida State away and not have a repeat of last year where you gave them all the freebies early and gave them reason to live, gave them reason for life, this is an unsettling loss if you're UNC.
I don't think Mack Brown's handling this well. Maybe he doesn't know how to handle it. Maybe, and this is something that Lauren Brownlow pointed out in the panic room, when Mack Brown took over at North Carolina 3 years ago, he said he learned a lot, you know, in the 5 years away from being in head coaching when he wasn't at Texas. He admitted he didn't take losing very well, right? You know, ask Sally. I wasn't good to be around, this and that. But he's learned, you know, he's learned to appreciate what the media does. He learned to kind of process things a little bit better. This was like a new Mack Brown with his last go at North Carolina. And instead, what we're seeing out of Mack Brown is somebody who's not winning with some saltiness and not losing with some saltiness. So, like, let's go back to post-Duke, right? They beat Duke, a game in which you could point out some flaws for the Tar Heels because Duke's probably the worst team in the ACC right now. Probably. If I had to guess, if I had to pick one, Duke, after losing to Georgia Tech, would definitely be it right now. Duke was still able to get to Sam Howell, still kind of exposed offensive line problems, and you can still see some issues defensively. But after that win on the Monday press conference, Mack Brown talked about, all right, people are going to be trying to get back on the bandwagon after we win these games. I expect to win. We're going to win. Here's what he said on Monday of last week.
We're going to win. We're going to be great at some point, and those that are jumping off are going to want to jump back on. And I just hope there's no tickets available.
So a little bit of saltiness there at the fans. I don't understand why. I think it's absolutely fair to point out some of the deficiencies for North Carolina. And maybe he's still kind of smarting after the Georgia Tech loss in Atlanta, which was embarrassing and completely obliterated any of those preseason expectations, which came up again on Saturday after the loss, where Mac Brown decided to take some time in his postgame press conference to relitigate the preseason expectations in early October. I just said they were done. We moved on from that conversation after the Georgia Tech loss. And that was about taking advantage of what was ahead of you at home before you go to Notre Dame. You're going up against a lousy Florida State team that's 1-4, almost spit the bit against Syracuse the week before. There's still some questions about Mike Norvell. You are in year three of your program turning the corner while Florida State's still figuring it out. And Mac Brown is still talking about preseason expectations and putting it on media.
My expectations to win every game. So we've three times we've met it and three times we haven't. The national media expectation, the expectations for us to be a top 10 team were wrong. So I guess we should all be critical of the media for picking us too high because we're not that good. So you guys all screwed it up.
Now he's saying that with a little bit of a smirk, but dude, time and place. You just embarrassed yourself against Florida State at home. Nobody's interested in preseason expectation talk. Nobody's interested in you. Oh, I guess we got to criticize the media for pick. You're going to criticize the coaches too? They picked you in the top 10 as well. So what are we doing here? What are we trying to get at? That's the reason why you lose to Florida State? Were the expectations for North Carolina turning the corner in year three so outlandish that we expect you to beat Florida State at home? And you didn't? Like, I don't understand what he's getting at.
Yeah, I can understand the loss to Virginia Tech in the opener.
Yes.
On the road, difficult environment, just an outpouring of emotion by Virginia Tech after a year where we had no fans.
Totally get that one.
I get that. That's the opener, too. That's a team that probably has equivalent talent to you as well. Losing to Georgia Tech, I can't understand that one. And then losing to Florida State, a team who, remember, you lost to last year and really derailed a lot of what you could have been last year.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite things to do now is to point out the teams. Sometimes it's your year and you don't even know it.
Yeah.
Last year was Carolina's year and they didn't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of owed them from last year, Florida State in particular. Virginia, that was a wild game, right? But Florida State was truly a game where they had punt blocks and pick sixes and just made all kinds of mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't the case on Saturday either. It was UNC's defense that really had a meltdown, a failure. And that's, look, Mac Brown is the master with the media and was before he went to ESPN, was before he went to Texas. Mac Brown, as my mom likes to say, could sell a bald man a comb. Like, he's got a charm to
him.
He does. And it's impossible to deny that.
Yeah.
But I also think that there are times where, when you have that ability to charm people, you have to understand there's a time to read the room and say, you know what? We screwed this one up.
Yeah.
And I think the Georgia Tech game was probably the time for that. I don't know if he did or didn't after the Georgia Tech game.
He did.
And then this one in particular, when you're the head coach, particularly in college, it only helps you to fall on the sword, right? Because you're telling your players, it's my fault. It's in public. In public, you're telling the players, it's my fault, it's my fault, it's my fault, it's my fault. That should almost always be the answer. It should never really be anyone else's fault other than your own.
Yeah.
And totally get not wanting to blame the players. Totally get that. But at some point, they have to fix what their actual problems are. And it's not, by the way, it's year three and we're building towards something. Because this is a team, yes, that lost skill players from last year, but returned the most important skill player, still has a decent amount of talent on offense, and really on defense, that's where all the recruiting success has been, thanks to Dre Bly and his connections in Charlotte. So that and Virginia. So that's the part I'm not understanding.
Yeah.
Is the performance of the defense. Don't forget now, Jay Bateman was at Army. Had success there, came here, had early success with Carolina. Particularly, I'm thinking of the Clemson game that first year where they played Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
Do they miss Chaz Surratt? I think it's fair to say. But this isn't like a team that had like this major overhaul. This is a team that returned many of the same. This is also a team, and let's get to Mac Brown's skill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When their four best players sat, or their four of their best five players sat out the Orange Bowl, by the way,
yeah,
which broke the bowl system, They somehow spun that loss by two scores into a positive.
Look at these guys that are up
and
coming.
Look.
Yep.
Like, that was one of the greatest Jedi mind tricks I've ever seen.
And they're still doing that now because a lot of the response to the loss on Saturday, including one from Mac Brown, I listened to his post-game radio interview with Jones Angel on the Tar Heel Radio Network. And after he went through what is now starting to sound like a script of post-game loss talking points from Mac Brown, he said, you know, I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have the audio clip, but this is what I heard on Saturday after the loss. You know, I want our fans to stick with us. You know, I know when you get to work on Monday, you're going to have a lot of people making fun of you because of the whole, you know, all the talk in the offseason. He said, like, our publicity got ahead of our team. Yet another reference to the expectations, which, again, I don't know why we're still talking about this on October 11th. But, again, I digress. And he said, but stick with us. You know, we're building something here. Except that I'm not quite sure that, and maybe this is just you and me being old, crusty, triangle sports observers who have seen this movie before. I don't know if the coaches who come through here understand that your windows are very limited. We've seen this movie before, and you can talk about your building program, but it ain't like you got another Sam Howell walking through the door. I keep hearing about wait till next year, wait till, what about next year? Sam Howell's gone, okay? He's going pro.
I will hedge this with the May family has been excellent to the University of North Carolina.
This is true.
I will hedge that with that.
This is true. Luke May, legend. Their dad, legend. I get all that stuff, right? But where have we seen this before?
I've seen this at NC State, and why people are bristling at this comparison for the life of me, I can't
understand. They're trying to make it out to be like what's going on at North Carolina somehow worse than what's happened at NC State, who has had NFL caliber QBs come through with
there's definitely a difference in preseason expectations.
Sure,
right? Like NC State's never been ranked in the preseason top 10. I totally understand that,
but that's an NC State problem versus being charmed by Mac Brown.
There you go. So to me, you have to make hay while the sun shines. And like I said, last year was Carolina's year, and they didn't even know it.
Yeah,
and that's the disappointment. That whether you believe I'm being sincere or not. You have to know when your window is. Right now is NC State's window, by the way.
It is.
Right?
They have another window this year.
They have a window this year. They had one in 17
yep.
under Dave Doran. That was the last one they really had.
Mm-hmm.
They had one under Tom O'Brien in 10 and 11.
But as with all things ACC, we can sit here and we can talk about NC State's window. We can sit here and talk about North Carolina not utilizing this time to take their window. Who is in a wide-open ACC?
Wake Forest.
Wake
Who
freaking
did in
06.
They hit it when they hit it. And that's the only thing. Like,
and they're doing it now.
This week, I talked to Jarius Moorhead, who played at NC State from redshirt in 15. Last year was 19.
Yeah.
And I asked him about the 17 season specifically. And it's like, you went 6-2 in the league. You won 9 games. These are good things. And the answer is almost, for everyone on that team, the answer is the same. Yes, but we left something on the table. And when you understand the opportunity in front of you, and when you understand, look, Clemson is only going to be down for so long, right? At the time, earlier, it was Florida State will only be down for so long, going back to the Phillip Rivers analogy. Those Florida State teams were not like lights out Florida State teams. Those are the opportunities that you have to take. Maryland did in 01, mm-hmm. by the way. Wake Forest, we've mentioned.
Duke did it.
So Duke in their year, now that was a Coastal. That was
coastal
a division title,
product.
But still, it's a division title. So I think Carolina is I think Mac Brown is being I think he's deflecting with the media, and that's fine. I get it. I'm sure he's being more honest with his players than he is being with us. I mean, that's a fairly standard coach move.
But the players are also deflecting for the coaching staff as well, because both Sam Howell and the defensive leaders were talking openly about, like, oh, you know, we didn't execute our game plan or whatever. They called it, you know, there was, I forgot, I think it was Gimmel who had the quote about Jay Bateman, the defensive coordinator's game plan and everything else, and they're just not executing and things like that, which, okay, that's fine. So the players are standing up and saying they're not executing. But here's where North Carolina goes from here.
I'm just going to stop you And I've already made this point to you.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to stop you.
No, go ahead.
The game they play against Wake Forest is not a conference game, so it doesn't matter.
No, I'm not even talking about conference.
But now. I'm just saying, all they have is the day after Thanksgiving.
Yes.
That's all they have. And I made this point after the Georgia Tech game, and some people were like, oh, no, they play Duke. They play blah, blah. No, stop kidding yourself. Stop deluding yourself. You now have a one-game season, and that's it.
Pretty much what it is, because Miami should be winnable. They don't have Derek King.
I got nothing for Miami.
But I got nothing for Miami.
I'm not
going to
waste
right
my brain cells on Miami.
You go to Notre Dame. The schedule went from somewhat easy during this stretch. And we talked about it. There was a reason why you thought North Carolina.
Yeah, because of the schedule.
You thought North Carolina was going to be in the coastal race because of the schedule.
No, I thought they were going to win the ACC.
And you thought they were going to win the thing because of the schedule. The schedule obviously has not panned out that way with losses to Georgia Tech and Florida State. But now the schedule gets hard for Duke,
right,
or for Carolina. That's my point.
Right.
I know what you're saying about NC State. What I'm talking about for North Carolina is just how out of pocket can it get for them? Because you go to Notre Dame, that's a home game against Wake Forest. I get that's non-conference. That's nothing to do with conference. Are you going to lose that game? Are you going to lose to Dave Clawson in that group? That's not a good look for Mack Brown. And then you got Pitt, which can be a wild one with Kenny Pickett at Pitt. And then, yes, the NC State game, which, by the way, NC State is ranked. Because we all had NC State being the top 25 team in October and Carolina being completely out of it, right? That's how we expected the season to go?
No.
Although I will remind people that I did say that I wouldn't be surprised if NC State beat North Carolina this season, but you wouldn't hear me telling I told you so again, would you? Sorry, that was jerky of me. I was fired up because I'm pretty sure I saw Sam Darnold back on Sunday. That Sam Darnold. You know the Sam Darnold I'm talking about. Three interceptions, a couple of unfortunate throws, including the miss to Robbie Anderson. That, yes, Robbie Anderson dove for it. Yes, maybe Robbie Anderson could have caught it. But even Sam Darnold's like, yeah, I threw a bad ball. Three picks, bad short field positions for the Eagles. But the Eagles' offense is still so disjointed, and the Carolina Panthers' defense is still so good that they limited those mistakes. But if you keep making mistakes, the defense can only do so much. And the Eagles finally cashed in and they beat the Panthers yesterday, which what I would classify as a straight up bad loss.
That was a classic game where they were, when they were ahead 15-6, it felt like it was 31-6, mm-hmm. right? Like it felt more lopsided than just 9 points. And then they had the secondary breakdown. Sam Franklin gets turned inside out by Quez Watkins on a 3rd and 10.
Yeah, I know.
Like that. That, to me, was the key play of the game. Hurts hitting Watkins, which set up their touchdown.
Yes.
And then from there, you're sitting here going, all right, now, they could still win this game, right? Mm. You know how I like to talk about sunny day players and staying on schedule. This was the first time Sam Darnold got off a schedule. This was the first time we saw him not on a sunny day. And I think you want your quarterback to be more like Jalen Hurts in that situation,
mm-hmm.
where after Zach Ertz had the big drop, I thought to myself, that guy's never going to touch the ball again. And then Dallas Goedert had a drop, and I'm like, oh, he's running this in, and what does he do? Took it into his own hands, made the plays that the Eagles needed him to make. I thought, obviously, a big difference, too, was Carolina's offensive line, a shell of what they probably could be with some injuries.
It continues to be bad. They've had those injuries. I understand that. But they also missed the safety valve that is Christian McCaffrey. At some point, we were going to have an honest conversation about what this team is without Christian McCaffrey.
I thought Chuba was good yesterday.
But but Christian McCaffrey can also line up as a receiver. He can be a pressure release. The Panthers' line has allowed 8 sacks and 19 hits on Darnold over the last 2 games. Can't get rid of the ball to his safety valve because he ain't there. And he's now Sam Darnold's also had 5 interceptions in 2 games. I know that we had the classic Sam Darnold, if you will, with the 3 interceptions. They were all on him. But you got to remember, he also had 2 interceptions there in the second half, back-to-back. Now, the Dallas secondary has proven to be pretty freaking good.
Yeah.
Okay. So some of that is just Dallas's secondary showing you how they've kind of been this breakout thing so far this season when we're not talking about Dak Prescott. Totally understand that. But that's 5 picks in 2 games, all 3. So this to me is – oh, and we also had a classic Matt Rule, what are you doing? Are you playing to just ice the clock rather than going out there to win? And you'll remember there was a sequence there where they were in that weird no man's land and they decided to punt rather than go for it on fourth down. Contrast that to what we see in San Diego. I'm sorry, not San Diego. The Chargers with their head coach who's going for it all the freaking time.
That game was wild. That game was drunk.
So Rule, for all of the praise that we give them to try to be a little bit more ahead of the curve and everything else, they still play a little – they play with their butts tight from time to time, and they try to nurse a lead rather than go out there and win it. And they allow the Eagles to hang around. And there was a bad punt that basically gave them like a net of 20 yards, and the Eagles have yet more better – have good field position to work with. But you know how I know that the offense is a problem right now? Because Matt Rule spent time today not talking about Sam Darnold's three picks, not talking about missing Christian McCaffrey or trying to shuffle dudes on the offensive line. Matt Rule spent time today saying the defense has to do better, and I am flabbergasted.
Probably be a little bit thing out there like, hey, you know, defense played well, and you know, it's 2 weeks in a row now the defense had a chance to stop the opponent and get the ball back to go down and score, and we weren't able to do it defensively. So but really just a disappointing day. You know, I know a lot of questions are going to be about the offense, but if you have a lead in the fourth quarter with the players we have on defense, we should never lose. We should never lose. And so I hope our defense shows up today with that mentality and doesn't just fall victim to the, oh, you know, the offense turned the ball over, da-da-da-da-da. Like we all get that. No one's taken it away from the offense. This is a team loss. Special teams, offense, defense, we've got to play better.
Now, this falls in line with what Matt Rule typically likes to do, where everything is connected. The knee bone's connected to the leg bone, blah, 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 right? I get all that stuff. But in this particular case, we could all see with our own eyes, if you watched it on Sunday, that the defense was, of the list of reasons why the Panthers lost, the last thing on the list of reasons why the Panthers lost.
I'm going to disagree just in the sense that, to his point, when it's closing time, and I know it was only 9 points, but 15-6, it just felt like one more stop on third and 10, Joe.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Hurts is able to hit the big shot down the field. That's the kind of breakdown you just can't – you can't give the other team life in that situation.
Which is where the offense kept giving the other team life with their mistakes.
And they did. The punt block. So to his point, I'm not going to disagree with what he's saying.
Sure.
I'm hearing what he's saying about when you are going to rely on your defense, which we've talked about this with them, with Matt Rule in particular, of how he came up and how he wants to play a certain style of football. Your defense has to come up with that type of stop in that situation and really just close the door on the Eagles, who really were hapless in the first half.
Hapless in the first half, and this is also, I might add, a defense that if you buy into Football Outsiders and their DVOA, their analytics, they were 24th in defensive DVOA going into this game. They've played good teams, and they've shredded them on the defense. However, we've seen what this offense is capable of, even without Christian McCaffrey, because I thought they had a good game plan against the Dallas Cowboys.
I thought Hubbard played well yesterday. I thought he ran the ball hard. There was actually a series where they took him out. It was actually after the Watkins set up the big touchdown.
Yeah.
Where they had to settle for a 50-yard field goal, which was fine. Gonzalez makes the field goal. But on third and two, he brings in Royce Freeman, and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, Hubbard's got 28 yards by himself on this drive. Call a timeout if he's tired. Let him rest, because this is your chance. If you punch right back there, it's still a two-score game.
Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports, he's our NFL insider, joining us now on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. I feel like you could probably start like a Heels Football Ain't for Soft People podcast too.
Oh boy. I'm not going to take the bait on that one.
No?
No, I did hear that UNC had a rough weekend, and also heard that Mac Brown is making some convoluted argument about how it's the media's fault. So
I
kind of tapped out on UNC football for a couple of days after.
Fair. I believe Mac Brown, after losing to Florida State, was, as the kids would say, down bad. Speaking of which, Urban Meyer seems to be down bad. Jacksonville Jaguars head coach. Look, I never really bought the idea that Urban Meyer's actively trying to get fired. That's like jokey jokes that we make. Haha. George Costanza, the whole thing. I'm here for the jokes. I totally understand. But after his press availability today, where he had to like clarify this business about, oh, Trevor Lawrence, our star quarterback, you know, he's not quite comfortable with a QB sneak, only for Trevor Lawrence to tell the media, no, I'm perfectly comfortable with a QB sneak. And then also forgetting that his top rusher, I guess he just forgot about him in the second half. And then saying he wants to be a 250-250 team, meaning that he wants to rush for 250 yards and throw for 250 yards as though he's got SUNY Buffalo on the schedule. What is up with Matt? What is up with Urban?
I really don't know. And it's been a long 10 days for Urban. I don't know. And it was puzzling, the quarterback sneak comment, because first of all, of course, Trevor Lawrence would have to be comfortable doing it. He's a 6'6" mountain of a dude in the NFL. So that doesn't make any sense. But number two, if you spent so much time preparing for this job and studying Trevor Lawrence in the pre-draft process and dating back to even, 2020, why didn't you decide that during OTAs, during rookie minicamp, during training camp, that you were going to actually try to work on this? So that's a tacit admission, even if it's true that you were a bad coach in that respect. But beyond all of that, it certainly seems, and there were jokes in week one about, okay, Urban, he's not going to make it through the end of the season. He is very clearly cracking. There's no two ways about it. And you don't rush for 250 yards and also throw for 250 week in, week out in the NFL. You're going to be lucky if you do that one time in a season. There's a disconnect between Urban and reality right now. And a lot of it is self-inflicted. He's in total control of the ship here, and we see what's happening with the ship, but he's cracking, and like jokes aside, I really do not believe he's going to make it through the end of the year.
Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports, joining us here on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. That's Jovius. I'm Joe Giglio. All right, from one end of the AFC Double J to the other, is there a more powerful force in the universe than losing in the Super Bowl?
Ooh, yeah, that's a great question. No, I don't know if there is, that would give Isaac Newton, he'd love to hear that one.
He would need a fourth world, right?
Right. But no, I do think that we're seeing it a little bit right with the Kansas City Chiefs, where, it's not just that they lost the Super Bowl, but it's that Patrick Mahomes covered up so many of their issues for so long, and eventually the dam's going to break. And so what you have with Patrick Mahomes is now he's starting to make some mistakes. Well, this is a team that can't withstand mistakes. You have an offensive line that is pieced together and is playing well right now, especially on the interior. But if Clyde Edwards-Helaire doesn't look like the guy from LSU on a given night, then you can't run the football. And Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and Mecole Hardman, they can go out there and get you yards, but the defense has to hold up its end of the bargain. And so for so long, the defense just needed to be average. But now that they are bad, and now that you have Patrick Mahomes turning the football over, and now that you don't have a running game, and even if you have figured out your penalties, because people don't really understand this, but for the three previous years, the Kansas City Chiefs were the second most penalized team in the NFL behind the Jacksonville Jaguars. Mm-hmm. And so they've sort of cleaned that aspect up. They're a little bit more disciplined, but everywhere else is faltering. And so when those things happen, you wind up losing to top-tier opponents. And that's who they are losing to right now. Make no mistake about it. The teams, Baltimore, the Chargers, and of course the Buffalo Bills, probably the best team in the NFL right now. The three teams that they've lost to could all very well be in the AFC title game. And so I'm not pushing the panic button on the Chiefs. I'm not saying that they're not going to make the playoffs like so many teams who missed the Super Bowl the year previous. However, I think if you had the Chiefs in pen or pencil in Super Bowl 50, you wish it were in pencil so you could go ahead and erase that.
Yeah, I would panic. And last night was indicative of not losing to a really good Bills team, Double J. I saw the drops again. The Super Bowl, the drops. Even Hyde's touchdown was a drop pass by Tariq Hill. They don't look, I hate to be super basic here, but when you win the damn thing, you're just not as hungry as you were on the way up. And when I look at the Chiefs, saw the same thing last year, and I see it this year, they're just not doing the little things that they did to get to that point. Not to discredit anything you've said about their defense and their penalties. Those are all true things. But when I see the drops, I'm sitting here going, this is the problem. This is what I saw in the Super Bowl last year.
Yeah, and this was also a team, you have to remember last season, this was a team that won a whole lot of close games. And normally that luck does not translate year over year. And so in something like all of the one possession games, they went something like 12-1 in one possession games last year, and 8-1, excuse me. And they were 5-0 in games decided by 3 points or fewer. And so they were playing close games last year.
Yeah.
Right. They just happened to win almost all of them on their way to 14-2. Now they have a tough schedule at the front of the season. They have injuries along the defensive line, like Chris Jones, who is their best pass rusher, can't get out there. Guys from Seattle, they went out and got, aren't playing like they did in Seattle. And Daniel Sorensen, the poor guy out there at safety, is getting picked on by every quarterback who sees that their wide receiver has Daniel Sorensen on them. They need to pull him off. They need to pull Neiman off. There's a couple of things that they can fix. Steve Spagnuolo is a fantastic defensive coordinator, and I do think they're going to fix it. It's just – and you know what? I think at the end of this, when we get to December, they're going to say, you know what? I'm glad that we went through these trials in September and October because it did make us a better team for the playoffs down the road.
Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports, our NFL insider, joins us every Monday here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. Are there any similarities to the way things started out with Russell Wilson in Seattle and the way things started out with Patrick Mahomes and Kansas City? They both lose in a Super Bowl, and they've struggled to get back to what they once were. I mean, I can't help but think of a scenario in Seattle where Russell Wilson, when he comes back from his injury, well, you know, he's going to play it out, but I can't imagine him coming back with the Seahawks. If we thought this offseason of passive aggressiveness was cute, it's going to get worse this upcoming offseason because that's just a bad Seahawks team around him.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that if 12-4 last season and being first in the best division in football and making it to the playoffs for 8 out of 9 years wasn't enough for Russell Wilson with the Seattle Seahawks, then whatever is about to happen with the Seahawks now certainly will not be enough. And we're going to see Russell Wilson elsewhere. And maybe that'll be with, the Pittsburgh Steelers or the New York Giants, or it's hard to imagine that they would send him off to the Green Bay Packers there in the NFC. But, you know, perhaps there's going to be a lot of quarterback shakeups, right? Because Aaron Rodgers is out. We're going to see what Vegas does. Obviously, Ben Roethlisberger is going to be out. Deshaun Watson is going to be in the mix somewhere.
Although it's funny you bring up Aaron Rodgers because doesn't he have what he wants?
Well, I mean, didn't he have what he wanted for the previous 2 years?
Well, there's that, but like we're seeing it, like now that things have kind of gotten cooking, like he has what he wants. He even has luck on his side again with these bounced kicks, left and right.
Right. I mean, they went 13-3 in consecutive years. They hosted the NFC title game last year. It's hard to imagine. And even around the draft time where the news really broke about his displeasure there, it was always hard to imagine that he was actually going to find himself in a better situation if you want to get to a Super Bowl. But this is a guy who is a world-class grudge holder. And so I've been saying ever since it became very clear that he was going to rejoin the team back at training camp, that short of a Super Bowl, Aaron Rodgers will be out of Green Bay. And you certainly have to look at the Denver Broncos and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Denver Broncos is number one, and then the Steelers and others there, sort of a distant second.
Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports, joining us here on the OG. All right, Double J, I hope this matches mine. What was your favorite moment of the NFL weekend?
Oh gosh. I want to hear yours first. It was probably, I do enjoy the kicker pain. And so all of the missed kicks in that Packers-Bengals game, it really put a smile on my face. But in all seriousness, it was probably the duel out in L.A. between the Browns and the Chargers. Yeah.
Specifically, right? It was Austin Eckler taking a knee, basically. I'm sitting here going, buddy, you need to score. And he slides down. And then all of a sudden, he's standing there. I have never, ever seen – I've seen – defenses let another player score before. I have never seen defenses push a running back into the end zone the way that the Cleveland Browns did, though. I thought that was spectacular.
That really was. And it was such smart football back and forth with both sides. And, you know, I talk and nerd out about Brandon Staley, the first-year head coach over with the Chargers. But he's a guy I just want to put it in perspective for folks, because he was going for it on fourth down, like 4th-and-7 and 4th-and-8, when he really didn't even have to just yet. He's a guy with a defensive background who, when they get to midfield, he is deciding that I have a prodigious quarterback in Justin Herbert. Shame on me if I don't put the football in his hands and continue these drives. And whether the data is on his side, whether the chart says absolutely go for it here, he has a feeling and a trust in his quarterback that not only many coaches do not have, but certainly not many coaches with his defensive background would have. And we saw it the previous week against the Raiders that helped them win that game. And then certainly yesterday against the Browns. I think that the Chargers, and I'm not just saying this because the Chiefs are struggling right now, and it's the easier thing to say. I have felt for the last couple of weeks the Chargers could win the AFC West, and right now they're very clearly in the driver's seat.
Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports NFL Insider, joining us here on the OG. We'll get you out of here on this. Carolina Panthers, I thought, had a bad loss to the Philadelphia Eagles. And I know Matt Rhule likes to talk about team wins and team losses, and he's trying to put some onus on the defense for not getting enough stops. But I get what he's doing. That doesn't mean I have to go with it. And I can sit here and say, no, the offense lost this for you because Sam Darnold went back to the bad Sam Darnold that everybody was curious about. How much of this is not having Christian McCaffrey now for two games, and how much of this is Sam Darnold maybe kind of regression to the mean in Carolina?
You know, maybe there's some of that with Sam Darnold, and it'd be a lot nicer if he had Christian McCaffrey out there. Maybe he doesn't have to try Darius Slay the times that he did yesterday, or try Trayvon Diggs the times that he did the week before. The answer, of course, can't always be, well, you have to have Christian McCaffrey, because unfortunately there's been a lot of injuries with Christian McCaffrey. Yeah. So you do have to assume that over a 17-game season, he's not going to be there some games. The defense did its job, and I was very I heard Matt Rhule's comments, and it felt to me like, hey, he had decided after the game or during at the end of the game, this was going to be a collective thing. The coaches didn't coach well. The players didn't play well. We got to go back to the drawing board. And he wasn't really willing to give credit to the defense because it's all for one and one for all, maybe. But when the defense in the second quarter, or excuse me, in the second half, they go fumble, interception, punt, gave up a touchdown, but then they forced a turnover on downs and another touchdown in the fourth quarter, that should be enough.
Yes.
That should really be against a team that is throwing the ball horizontally every single chance they get because they don't want to test you because they're not good enough.
They don't have a run game.
They have no run game, and they have to simulate a run by just screen passes. Your offense with Sam Darnold and Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore and Chuba Hubbard, they have to get over 22 points. That's just the bottom line, and they didn't do it. They failed at that. Sam Darnold did fail at that. And all of the concerns that we all had about the Panthers' offensive line back in shortly after free agency – are starting to come true. That offensive line didn't look like it was going to hold up and really be help make anyone a Pro Bowler back there. And now today we're looking at the interior of that offensive line and saying, why did the Panthers think that they were going to be able to win football games with this line?
Jonathan Jones, CBS, covers the NFL, joins us every Monday. All right, man, we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, guys.
On Cold brought to you by Any Day Heating and Cooling, a family-owned company. Who's your hot of the weekend?
I mean, in true Triangle Petty fashion, not only did Texas A&M beat the number one team in the country, Alabama, but I bet you 75% of their fan base was even more fired up that Texas blew this gigantic lead against Oklahoma. So you have this double whammy of their rival squandering a big game and then, of course, delivering the big win against Alabama.
My hot of the weekend goes to the Texas A&M booster that is arguing with other Texas A&M boosters over who's going to pay the $100,000 fine for storming the field after they beat Alabama. The fine is not the thing. I want a reality show from all the Texas A&M boosters that are jockeying to be the one who cuts the check so that they can brag about it to all their other rich Texas A&M booster buddies. Oh, I'll pay cash. I will walk it down to Birmingham, and I will pay Greg Sankey personally with a whole briefcase full of money. Fining Texas A&M $100,000 for rushing the field, I get that it's policy, but all you're doing with that fine is adding to the legend of what happened over the weekend. So shout out to the booster who's going to foot the bill for that one. Who's your cold of the weekend?
Yes, I'm very cold.
My cold is poor UConn. Man, this was their big chance to get a win, Joe. They were taking on equally hapless UMass, but the Huskies can only manage 13 points. They end up losing 27-13. UMass had lost 16 straight, Joe. Like, this was truly, truly an opportunity for the Huskies to finally, after playing Vanderbilt to a close call with Vanderbilt last week, you may remember, in another hapless situation. Poor Huskies, 2 weeks in a row now.
My cold of the weekend goes to Urban Meyer, head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. I almost want to make cold of the weekend the Urban Meyer, like, career achievement award,
because yeah,
this guy's going to be the cold of the weekend from now until he loses the job in Jacksonville. Like, where do I start with Urban Meyer this weekend? He says that Trevor Lawrence, their QB, isn't comfortable with doing QB sneaks, only for Trevor Lawrence to say, no, I'm perfectly comfortable with QB sneaks. And then today he talks about, oh, well, no, you see, we just haven't done it live yet. Y'all, it's week six. How have you not worked on that with your star QB in situational football in practice? What am I missing here with the coaching staff not being comfortable with that sort of thing? And then he says today, oh, we want to be a 250-250 ball club. What? What does that mean exactly? Oh, well, we're going to rush for 250 yards and throw for 250 yards. What? This is the NFL, man. It's not college football. You don't have Rutgers on the schedule coming up. You're not following that up against Wofford at home. 250 in the NFL. It's only been done like 33 times since the 50s. What are you talking about? Anyway, Urban Meyer, he's like my permanent cold of the weekend.
Yeah. It's time for Rant 2.
Acapella the news.
Well, guys, I need to apologize. It's my fault, apparently.
Oh.
That Mac Brown and the Tar Heels are 3-3. At least that's what Mac said.
Yeah.
That it's the media's fault. So, you know, that's fine. Just blame it on me.
Blame it on the press. Got you in a mess. Blame it on the hype. Things not going right. Blame it on the media. Blame it on the media.
Yeah. Wow.
You know we usually don't. Something he usually owns. The fans will usually groan because they don't want to hear any excuses. Because now you're 3-3. Not how it's supposed to be. The bandwagoners flee because he's still trying to figure it out. Hey, Mac, what you thinking? Need to let it sink in. Your team's stinking. Another bad weekend. Now you really wish you could hit rewind. Keeps him getting hit all these times. All disappointed, season disjointed. Recruiting still there, but nobody cares what you're gonna do the rest of this year, cuz, done blamed it on the press. Got you in a mess. Blame it on the hype. Things are going right.
Media's fault, man. Our bad.
Turn that up.
Oh, I didn't do it that time.
Oh, you didn't do it? Oh,
no,
man.
It's only in the first. It's only in the beginning where he goes.
That's true. All right, fair enough.
High quality editing.
You've been listening to the best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 6 p.m., and you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.